gaining a reputation for reversing terminal heart disease. He just opened a new center in California, and my grandmother, in desperation, somehow made the cross-country trek to become one of his first patients. This was a live-in program where everyone was placed on a plant-based diet and then started on a graded exercise regimen. They wheeled my grandmother in, and she walked out. I'll never forget that. She was even featured in Pritikin's biography, Pritikin, the man who healed America's heart. My grandmother was described as one of the death's door people in the book. Here's the quote. Francis Greger, from North Miami, Florida, arrived in Santa Barbara at one of Pritikin's early sessions in a wheelchair. Mrs. Greger had heart disease, angina, and claudication. Her condition was so bad she could no longer walk without great pain in her chest and legs. Within 3 weeks, though, she was not only out of her wheelchair, but was walking 10 miles a day. When I was a kid, that's all that mattered. I got to play with Grandma again. But over the years, I grew to understand the significance of what had happened. At that time, the medical profession didn't even think it was possible to reverse heart disease. Drugs were given to try to slow the progression, and surgery was performed to circumvent clogged arteries to try to relieve symptoms. But the disease was expected to get worse and worse until you died. Now, however, we know that as soon as we stop eating an artery-clogging diet, our bodies can start healing themselves, in many ways opening up arteries without drugs, without surgery. My grandma was given her medical death sentence at age 65. Thanks to a healthy diet and lifestyle, she was able to enjoy another 31 years on this earth with her 6 grandchildren, including me. The woman who was once told by her doctor she only had weeks to live didn't die until she was 96 years old. Her near-miraculous recovery not only inspired one of those grandkids to pursue a career in medicine, but granted her enough healthy years to see him graduate from medical school. By the time I became a doctor, giants like Dean Ornish, MD, president and founder of the nonprofit Preventive Medicine Research Institute, had already proven, beyond a shadow of a doubt, what Pritikin had shown to be true. Using the latest high-tech advances, cardiac PET scans, quantitative coronary arteriography, and radionucleotide ventriculography, Dr. Ornish and his colleagues showed that the lowest-tech approach, diet and lifestyle, can undeniably reverse heart disease, our leading killer. Dr. Ornish and his colleagues' studies were published in some of the most prestigious medical journals in the world, yet medical practice hardly changed. Why? Why were doctors still prescribing drugs and using Roto-Rooter-type procedures to just treat the symptoms of heart disease and to try to forestall what they chose to believe was the inevitable in early death? This was my wake-up call. I opened my eyes to the depressing fact that there are other forces at work in medicine besides science. The U.S. healthcare system runs on a fee-for-service model in which doctors get paid for the pills and procedures they prescribe, rewarding quantity over quality. We don't get reimbursed for time spent counseling our patients about the benefits of healthy eating. If doctors were instead paid for performance, there'd be a financial incentive to treat the lifestyle causes of disease. Until the model of reimbursement changes, I unfortunately don't expect great changes in medical care or medical education. Only a quarter of medical schools appear to offer a single dedicated course on nutrition. During my first interview for medical school at Cornell University, I remember the interviewer emphatically stating, quote, "Nutrition is superfluous to human health." And he was a pediatrician. I knew I was in for a long road ahead. Come to think of it, I think the only medical professional who ever asked me about a family member's diet was our veterinarian. I was honored to be accepted by 19 medical schools. I chose Tufts because they boasted the most nutrition training, 21 hours worth, although that's still less than 1% of the curriculum. During my medical training, I was offered countless steak dinners and fancy perks by Big Pharma representatives, but not once did I get a call from Big Broccoli.